I'm Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Andrew Saul, and we're going to talk about orthomolecular medicine and his book, Fire Your Doctor, How to Be Independently Healthy. How are you, Dr. Saul?
Very good, thank you.
My, what a good book. Everybody needs to have this book, and everybody needs to buy one and give it to their doctor for a Christmas present.
Well, that's a very kind thing to say. Dr. Abram Hoffer, my co-author, and I have tried to make a book that is practical, and it is for doctors as well as for everybody else. And in a way, the whole idea that we have to go to the doctor may be kind of an old concept. The more we learn, the more capable we are for taking care of ourselves. But of course, a lot of people would say, well, wait a minute, now there's a lot to know. Now, I'd agree with that, and Dr. Hoffer does too. And with his 55 years of experience in medicine, and the 30 years I have as a natural health educator and professor, we decided that we would try to make natural healing live, try to make it practical. And orthomolecular medicine, or nutritional healing, is something that's safe and effective, and we can learn to do this ourselves.
It's a fabulous book. Tell everybody where they, before we get started, because I've got a long lot of questions for you, where to find you and how to find this book.
Well, the quickest way to find me is on the Internet, and my website is called Doctor Yourself, and that's all one long word, doctoryourself.com.
Is it spelled out, doctor?
Yes, D-O-C-T-O-R. So it's doctoryourself.com, or they can just search Google for my name, and they'll find it pretty quickly, because we get over 35,000 hits a day at doctoryourself.com. It's a non-commercial website. Nobody's going to try to sell you anything. There's no advertisements. There's no product endorsements. It is peer-reviewed. That means that I have medical doctors that have read it over, and these are doctors who know nutrition, and they have reviewed the site and the different articles there for accuracy. It is easily searchable. All ages can use it. I have folks that are new to the Internet, and when they go to doctoryourself.com, they find it's very easy. Just type in a word. Let's say you're interested in arthritis or depression. Just type that in the search box, and it'll get all the articles for you just one click away.
Okay. Good job. All right. Now, I have some detailed questions that I want to talk to you about tonight, because I know that the general information is there, but I have some kind of detailed ones that I want to ask you about. So let's start off, obviously, with niacin, since you and Dr. Hoffer have spent a good deal of your time on niacin.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing anybody says to me when I point them to that site is, oh, the flush. Tell me, what is the importance of the flush? What is it doing? Why do we need to have it? Why would we take niacin over niacinamide or some other form of B? Particularly, you know, so many people is interested in heart disease and cholesterol problems, not to mention depression. So which one would you take for which thing and why?
All right, that's a very good question. In fact, that's about six good questions.
Well, I've got about 30 more, so.
All right, well, I appreciate that. And, you know, you're asking the question that your listeners want you to ask me, and I'm happy to give you that answer. First of all, niacin is vitamin B3, and there are two other forms of niacin. One is niacinamide, and the other is inositol hexaniacinate. Now, sorry about the words, but I didn't name them. Niacin is the cheapest form of niacin, and niacin not only helps to improve mood and relieve depression and decrease psychotic symptoms, but niacin also lowers cholesterol. Specifically, it lowers the bad kind of cholesterol, and it raises the good kind. Dr. Hoffer reported on this back in the 1950s. Now, niacin, if you take a lot of it, will cause a flush, like you were describing. And it's basically like a hot flash. You ladies out there that have had a hot flash know what that is. Just about all of us have felt a little bit of heat if we've been out in the sun or maybe we're a little embarrassed and we have a blushing. It's basically the same thing. The niacin flush is a vasodilation. In other words, the little blood vessels near the skin are opening up a little bit, and that causes a harmless pinking up of the skin and a little bit more heat. For people that have Raynaud's syndrome and other problems where they are often cold, the niacin flush is welcome. Where I live in upstate New York, we just had a pretty rough winter, and I'm here to tell you that the niacin flush is a pleasant thing to have. Many people wonder, is it harmful? The answer is no, it is not. It is an indicator that at that exact moment, your body is flushing out histamine. Now, people that have allergies, people that have asthma, for instance, people that have difficulty breathing, a bad example of this would be someone that has a bee sting allergy, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
They can flush out so much histamine at once that they can actually have difficulty breathing. The body doesn't want so much histamine, and one nice thing about niacin is that it does provide a release for you. Not all at once, not in a harmful way, but in a gradual way. So let's say a person were taking more niacin in order to sleep better, or to improve their mood, to relieve depression, or to lower cholesterol. They'll usually find when they start taking niacin at Dr. Hoffer's recommended level, about 3,000 milligrams a day, when they start taking niacin, they will flush. They will feel some warmth. Now, if you take the niacin in an empty stomach, you'll feel that flush much sooner. If you
Question.
Take it with food, it'll be delayed.
But what about the itching? Is that an indication that something's wrong, that you can't handle it, or is that okay?
It's part of the flush for some people. Some people itch a little bit. I tell folks that if they find the flush is a problem, or if they find that the itching is a problem, even though it will pass, if you keep taking the niacin, Dr. Hoffer says within 2 weeks you won't even be doing it anymore as long as you keep taking it regularly, you do have two other options, and that's to go to the forms of niacin we mentioned earlier, either niacinamide or inositol hexaniacinate. Now, that's known as no-flush niacin. We'll talk about that one first. Inositol hexaniacinate does not cause a flush except in the very, very rarest of circumstances. It provides a more gradual release of the nutrient, and it will still improve mood, and it will still lower cholesterol. Now, niacinamide will not lower cholesterol. Niacinamide will improve mood. The difficulty of niacinamide is that while it never causes a flush, it also can't be taken in as large a quantity as regular old flush-causing niacin. Now, most people never run into this, but some people that are taking really large amounts of niacin, like a lady I knew who was extremely depressed, she needed 11,000 milligrams of niacin a day. That's a huge amount of niacin. If she had taken that as niacinamide, she probably would have had some nausea. So niacin is better in that it does not cause nausea, and you can take a lot of it. Niacinamide is nice in that it never causes a flush. Inositol hexaniacinate, and by the way, I have no connection financially with the supplement industry, and it doesn't matter what brand to me one gets. Inositol hexaniacinate is sort of the best of both worlds. It doesn't cause a flush. It still lowers cholesterol. The problem with it is that it's a little bit more expensive. They're all vitamin B3.
What about edema around the ankles? I started doing this because I like to try everything I'd want my listeners to try. And I started getting pretty heavy ankle edema. Why is that?
I'm not sure. That would be a good question for your doctor. Remember, I'm not a physician. My background is in education. And I would say that it may have little to do with the niacin. There's a lot of people that have edema that don't take niacin. And there's an awful lot of people that take niacin and don't have edema. So I don't have a clear-cut answer for that.
Okay. Well, just so everybody knows, I have Dr. Hoffer himself next week. So any questions that we don't know this week, we'll save next week for Dr. Hoffer.
That's a very good idea. My father always said to me, don't ask the monkey, go to the organ grinder. And Dr. Hoffer has vast experience as a physician, and he is a good one to ask the more technical questions, too. And I was a real lucky man to be able to learn from Dr. Hoffer all these years, and to be honored and privileged to write Orthomolecular Medicine for everyone along with him.
He's amazing, Stella. So, do you get as much benefit for cholesterol? What about hypercholesterolemia, by the way? And do you get as much benefit from one source of the supplement as another for heart disease and hypercholesterolemia?
You mean talking just about niacin?
Yes. Or anything else you know that has to do with that, because a lot of people have that nowadays.
Well, the best approach to high cholesterol is not to just take niacin, but to really revamp your life and do the lifestyle change that most people know they should be doing but are having trouble doing. Niacin is the cheapest single remedy that can be used to lower cholesterol. In fact, the physician who's the president of the American College of Cardiology actually said, nothing comes close, niacin is it. It is cheaper than the drugs, it is safer than the drugs, and it is more effective than the drugs. That's a pretty strong recommendation. Along with that, though, I would recommend that people move towards a plant-based diet, less meat, and Dr. Hoffer and I always emphasize no junk. Get the junk food out of your diet, because that's where all your salt and fat and sugar is coming from, and salt and fat and sugar are guaranteed to cause trouble with your ticker and your blood vessels. In addition to that, normal, healthy exercise, which we've all heard about, organized stress reduction, which we've also heard about, and the other B, as in Bob, B-complex vitamins are very important, along with vitamin C and vitamin E. Doctors Wilford and Evan Shute used vitamin E, as in Edward, with over 30,000 patients at their famous clinic in London, Ontario, Canada. The Shutes were pioneers in using up to 3,200 milligrams of vitamin E a day for cardiovascular disease. I should emphasize that most people need not.
I'm sorry, but if I don't ask you, I'll forget. Is it just E, or is it mixed up with ferrols, or does it matter?
It matters. When vitamin E was first used, they didn't even know it was vitamin E. They used wheat germ oil. And wheat germ oil has got all kinds of good stuff in it. It has everything we know is vitamin E, and it also has a lot of things we don't fully understand. So I would say, yes, it does matter. The natural form of vitamin E is best, and that is indicated with two label points. The first is it needs to be D-alpha, that's D as in Doug, or dextro for right-handed. It has to be right-handed vitamin E, D-alpha tocopherol, and it should contain, as you mentioned earlier, the mixed natural tocopherols that are concomitant with the vitamin E that we recognize by the standard of D-alpha. The other tocopherols are important, too. So I recommend people take the natural E with the mixed tocopherols as well.
All right, so they need to read the label closely.
Oh, golly, yes.
It doesn't just say vitamin E.
Yeah, it's just amazing how a product bottle and label can look and sound natural. And when you turn it on its side, you'll see it says DL alpha. And that DL means it's synthetic. Synthetic vitamin E will work, but it will not work nearly as well.
Okay. Next question. Let's talk about the minerals, zinc, selenium, copper, magnesium. And specifically, you know, magnesium and potassium and calcium are important, but my newest kick lately with Norm Shuey is transdermal magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comment about any of these and which one you think's better and why you would use one or the other?
Well, Dr. Shuey has my unreserved admiration. He's been involved in natural healing for a long time. He's very reliable, and he's an expert, and I would defer to him on that as far as detail. I can certainly say that any way you can get that magnesium in is a good idea. We have a nationwide deficiency of magnesium. It's particularly prevalent in young people. We talk about calcium a lot. Just about everybody knows about calcium. Okay, we'll have dairy products perhaps, although Dr. Hoffer and I don't really recommend dairy products. We recommend other sources of calcium, such as organically grown vegetables, and whenever you can, non-dairy sources. But the mineral magnesium is often forgotten. A lack of magnesium can cause cardiovascular problems. It can cause cramping. There's just a whole bunch of things that can be aggravated by magnesium deficiency. Magnesium is involved in hundreds of chemical reactions in the body, and that's why one person can be low on magnesium and show this symptom, and another person could be low on magnesium and show that symptom. A good example of this would be epilepsy in children. There was a study done by Barnett back in the 50s, and he was giving magnesium to kids that had epilepsy. And he found that if he gave them enough magnesium, he could eliminate the symptoms or greatly reduce the need for medication in almost every case. Magnesium has been used for young women with menstrual cramps. It's been used for a lot of different things. Magnesium is so valuable, it would almost be easier to not go over the long list, sort of
right,
like saying,
yeah,
what's water good for?
Right.
Funny thing about nutrients is that when we try to say, what's this nutrient good for, the answer is usually everything.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed when I talk to people, particularly older people that start developing heart disease, they go on all these pharmaceuticals and suddenly they can't get a good breath. Or they have terrible restless leg syndrome, so the doctor gives them another prescription. And then it starts affecting their gut and their gallbladder.
Mm.
When really, it's magnesium.
Yes, that's a very good point about restless leg syndrome. Magnesium would be the very first thing to try for it. If you take your magnesium, if you take it with some warm tea, it'll work a little bit better. There are many different ways to take magnesium. One of the crude ways is milk of magnesia, but I wouldn't recommend that. Too much magnesium will have a laxative effect. Incidentally, you have to take quite a bit to get a laxative effect, probably 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams or more. You can get magnesium as magnesium oxide. That's the cheapest form. The absorption is fair. Magnesium gluconate is better. Probably the best form of magnesium all around, considering price and absorption, would be magnesium citrate. Magnesium citrate's a good deal.
What about magnesium chloride? I don't know if I should do this or not, but I started going to this saltwater aquarium store and buying their magnesium salt and making a lotion.
Not a problem, because it doesn't really matter that much how you get the magnesium into you as long as you get it in there.
Okay. That's good to know, because it's cheap and it works.
Well, cheap and works is a very good pair of guidelines.
What about iodine, zinc, selenium, copper, manganese? What about those?
Well, they're all important, of course. There's only about 36 nutrients total that your body needs, and that includes amino acids and minerals and vitamins. So it's amazing, really, that all of our 35 trillion cells are based on only about 36 nutrients. So each nutrient has multiple uses. But you mentioned iodine. If you live in New York, a state where I do, iodine deficiency is the rule, not the exception. Iodine has been added to table salt for a long, long time. I'm not exactly sure that's the ideal way to do it, but I must admit, when I was a child back in the 50s and 60s, you would see people with goiters, and now you rarely do. I think a better way to get iodine is to eat sea vegetables. Kelp and dulse and things from the sea are loaded with iodine and other good minerals as well. Any kind of seaweed products, and if you're thinking, oh, seaweed, well, if you haven't tried it, you don't know what you're missing because it tastes a lot better than it sounds. You can also get tincture of iodine, just like the stuff you would put on a cut. And if you put one drop of tincture of iodine in half a gallon of juice, that will provide you with a generous amount of iodine, and you can take it that way. Talk about an inexpensive supplement.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even know that. Someone told me that if you put iodine on your skin and it's gone in a couple of hours, then you know that you have an iodine deficiency.
That is at least partly true. The quicker it goes away, the more you're absorbing. However, I can tell you that I take iodine on a regular basis, and when I put it on a cut, it's still gone in a few hours. So mm-hmm. It is partially true. Bottom line is, we are getting much too little iodine unless we eat a lot of products from the sea. And this is a big country, and not everybody lives near the ocean, and those who do don't necessarily eat sea vegetables. So iodine is a very simple supplement to provide. Just a drop of tincture in a half gallon of juice is enough. You don't need much, but you definitely need it. You mentioned selenium.
Yes. I wanted to ask one more question about iodine. People typically don't know what you use iodine for except for goiters and cuts. Why might they need it? We're profoundly deficient as a population.
Well, there's a lot of different reasons why we might want iodine. I would say probably the biggest value is for the thyroid gland. And we do have a nation of folks who are often either hyper or hypo, over or active thyroid gland people. And although iodine is not specifically a cure for that, it is part of the solution. I would recommend that if people have the symptoms of low thyroid function, if they're tired all the time, if they're gaining weight easily, Wilson syndrome, if they have a lot of problems that seem to plague them and there's no explanation for them, they might want to have their doctor check their thyroid. There's a very good book that I reviewed, and the review is posted at my website, of a book called Thyroid Power. I did not write this book. I wish I had. It's a very good volume that talks about the different types of tests and how to interpret them and the different types of therapy that your medical doctor can provide if your thyroid gland is over or especially underactive.
Well, that was going to be my next question to you. I know that doctors don't usually do the necessary test to really check thyroid function. Isn't there a particular test they need to ask for? That the average test the doctor runs not really going to be as accurate as you need it to be?
Well, I don't know if it's the test or it's the interpretation. In Thyroid Power, they go over that in considerable detail. And to answer the question quickly, I'm going to just go right to my comments from the review here.
Okay.
And at DoctorYourself.com, if you check thyroid out, you'll see this. The key here is to explain the important difference between T3 and T4 thyroid hormone. T3 seems to be the one to watch, and doctors characteristically overemphasize T4, which is storage thyroxine, and they tend to ignore the T3 or fast-acting or active thyroxine. And since doctors sort of fixate on test result numbers, which are often inadequate to detect borderline conditions, there's a whole bunch of people running around or walking around or walking slowly around with low thyroid. So if they have fatigue, depression, insomnia, weight gain, menopause troubles, endometriosis, arthritis, rheumatic complaints, low sex drive, infertility, intractable skin problems, they are what would be called normal, in quotes, but still uncomfortable.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Thank
right,
you.
So what we want to do is we want to have the doctor do the test, but then we have to make sure they're interpreted correctly. And what I like about Thyroid Power is it tells you exactly how to do that.
I think I'm going to try to get that guy to come on, too. I've been looking for somebody to talk about that.
His name is Richard Shames, Richard L. Shames, S-H-A-M-E-S. He's a physician, not an endocrinologist, but an extremely bright and well-read general practitioner. And I think he's presented a very good book. Now, in Orthomolecular Medicine for Everyone, we also talk about the importance of nutrition for the thyroid. And, of course, you're more than just the thyroid gland. There's so many things, they all work together. We've heard that before. It's almost a truism, isn't it?
Yes.
But we need it all. We can't just take some niacin and be done with it. We can't just take some iodine and be done. There's more to that. We also have to eliminate sugar from the diet. We need to get rid of the junk food, eliminate the artificial colors and the other chemicals that are harmful. We need, if possible, to try to get more fiber in our diet and to get more organic food. My solution to the organic problem is I have a big garden in the back. I just love growing my own food because I know what's in it, and I know what's
right,
not in it.
Right. I do, too. I do the same thing. Okay, my next question I want to talk about hypoglycemia or blood sugar problems and polyphenols, chromium, vanadyl, or vanadium. What can you tell us about that? Because I've noticed that people who start having heart problems also have sugar problems.
Yes, and this is something that was noticed by two British researchers. One was Constance Spittle, who published on vitamin deficiency and sugar and cardiovascular problems many years ago. And before her was Surgeon Captain T.L. Cleave, who wrote a wonderful book called The Saccharine Disease. Now, that has nothing to do with the artificial sweetener by the similar name. He was referring to the sugar disease.
Mm-hmm.
So these researchers were saying 55 years ago that we eat too much sugar. And now they were saying it back in 1950. And heaven knows we're not eating any less sugar now. I think we're eating a good bit more. Just look around you. You can see how many people and especially how many children are overweight. There was a time when it wasn't believed that sugar would really cause our children to get heavy. In fact, I have an advertisement from the U.S. Sugar Association, which specifically says, the sugar is fattening, how come kids are so thin? It's kind of funny. That was a National Geographic back in the 1970s, and I saved it. I thought, this is going to be interesting someday. Well, now we have a quarter or more of our children are overweight. Perhaps as much as a third of our population is actually obese. We know that sugar is a big part of the problem. When we get sugar out of the diet, all kinds of wonderful things start to happen. So the solution to low blood sugar, the number one solution, is to not have high blood sugar. And if you avoid eating sugar, you don't get that high drop, that roller coaster up and down that causes dreadful mood swings and all kinds of physical problems as well. Sugar is not your friend. If you want to feel better right away, you cut sugar out of your diet, you try it for 14 days, and you see if you don't feel better. And I've been challenging people with this for 3 decades, and nobody has come back and said to me, hey, you're wrong about the sugar, man. But I have heard the opposite. Now,
I have a question here, though, about sugar. When you say sugar, do you just literally mean sugar, or do you mean anything that metabolizes simple sugars like white flours and things like that?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
The biggest offender by far is sugar, and this means glucose, sucrose, and fructose. They are just troublemakers. It's sugar. It has no nutrients. They're nice, small molecules. They go right in. They get absorbed right away. The blood sugar goes up, and then it crashes, and then you feel lousy, and all kinds of problems can follow. It bothers the pancreas. It bothers everything about you. So sugar is the worst offender.
So what will polyphenols, chromium, and vanadium or vanadyl, will any of those help?
They will. If you have your trace minerals improve your sugar tolerance. There have been a lot of studies showing that chromium, for instance, increases your cell's sensitivity to insulin. Now, that doesn't sound like a good thing, but it actually is. You want your cells to be sensitive to insulin, so you can do with less insulin. When you take a lot of sugar, your blood sugar goes roaring up real high. Well, that's not good. So your body kicks out insulin to pull that down. The problem is, you keep kicking out the insulin once the sugar's gone, and now you have low sugar, so then you want a donut or a snack or a candy bar, and then the sugar goes up again, and you have this up-and-down thing, which is just nothing but trouble. When you have chromium, it evens out the highs and lows. Niacin will help. The B-complex vitamins will help. Vitamin C will help. In fact, a good diet in general will help. And believe it or not, more fiber will help. More fiber will help you improve your sugar tolerance. There was a famous book called Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask back in the 70s. It was written by Dr. David Rubin. Once he made his money from that book, he wrote a second book, which most people have never heard of, called The Save Your Life Diet. And that basically says, eat more fiber, and you'll have less trouble with diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and mental illness just by eating more fiber. So fiber is your friend, sugar is not. Your trace minerals, the chromium, very important. Most people are not even getting 50 micrograms of chromium a day. They should get at least 200 micrograms, and I think 400 is better. Now, it does matter to some extent what form of chromium you take. You can't go out and gnaw on the bumper of a 53 Buick. It has to be a type of chromium that you can absorb. Fortunately, almost any supplemental form of chromium is absorbed quite well. Probably the best is chromium picolinate, but any of the chromium supplements will work. And incidentally, 400 micrograms sounds like a lot, but I said micrograms. And a microgram is only a millionth of a gram, and a gram is only a quarter of a teaspoon. So 400 micrograms of chromium is a very, very tiny amount. But without it, your sugar tolerance is very poor. So more fiber, more chromium, less sugar, and try to have more complex carbos. Now, you mentioned that earlier, and very good idea that was to bring it up. A lot of flour, a lot of processed starches, and we mentioned this in Orthomolecular Medicine for everyone, of course. The processed starches are just a couple of steps away from sugar chemically. In fact, when I used to teach junior high school, one of the things we would do with the kids to catch their interest on digestion of starches is I would give them pieces of white bread, and they'd put the pieces of white bread on the table in front of them, and I'd have them drool all over the white bread. And what would happen is they could actually drool holes in the white bread. Their saliva would break down the starch into sugar right in front of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, it's interesting, but it's also kind of scary because we eat an awful lot of white flour and an awful lot of processed food, and that's not good. We want the whole thing. You want the whole grains. It's what Grandma said. She was right.
Okay.
TV's wrong, ladies and gentlemen. Don't listen to your television. Listen to your grandmother.
we've got, let's see, it's 8:36, and I've still got a handful of questions, but I want to ask you a question about these grains. Genetically modified foods, you know, wheat allergies. I stood behind a woman today at the grocery store who bought a $5 loaf of bread, and I thought, oh, my God, you're trying to do the best thing for your kid, but you're giving him all this genetically modified food that's going to cause him allergies down the road. What do we do? What do we replace grains with?
Well, that's a tough one. Even if you're an avid organic gardener, you're probably not going to grow a wheat field behind your house. I know that I can't. We do the best we can. For now, if you can buy food that you know is not genetically modified, if you can go for organic, if you can go to the food co-ops or the health food stores, that would be ideal. My personal opinion is the genetic modified foods will come back to bite us. I think it's a mistake. I was there when they started putting bovine growth hormone in cattle feed. I'm a former dairyman. I used to milk 120 head twice a day. I am here to tell you that there is no free lunch. You cannot load up cows on hormones and get more and better milk. There's a price to pay. The cow pays it, and we pay it. The same is true with genetically engineered crops. It's not a good idea. It's not nice to mess with Mother Nature. I'm a big believer in long-term evolution. And as a biologist, I'm here to tell you that making sudden changes to our food supply is not in our interest. Still, having said that, the human body is rough and tough, and I think most people will probably be okay. Still, go organic, go to the health food store. If you push your dealers and your retailers for organic food, for certified clean food, they will tend to listen.
I have to say this one little thing because I want my listeners to know what to look for, and then I'm going to move on and ask questions. I suddenly, and of course, you know, I know it's not suddenly, but for the average person, they would think that it was sudden, started having this huge bloating out of my stomach. So I thought, it's corn. I know that's what it is. It's genetically modified corn. So I went to the store and I bought organic tortilla chips
mm-hmm.
and I bought regular tortilla chips. When I eat the regular tortilla chips, I bled out of my stomach, burns and kills me. When I eat organic tortilla chips, nothing happens except I enjoy them.
Yeah, it's just that simple. I found that with grapes. I enjoy green grapes a lot, and New York produces a lot of grapes, of course. And when I eat them, I got sick. And I thought to myself, oh, green grapes make me sick. And then I thought, wait a minute. Could it be the pesticides? Could it be all those sprays?
We didn't do that when we were little.
Uh-huh. So what I do now is, and everyone thinks I'm a nut when I do this, and that's why I'm going to tell your listeners, because I think you should join me in my strangeness here. I take a big bowl of water, and I take dishwashing detergent, and I put a nice big squeeze into the water, and I wash my grapes in soapy water. And I mean, I wash them. I push them around in there, and I clean them up just like I was washing my hands. And when I pull the grapes out of that soapy water, you should see how gooey and viscous and thick and full of crud that water is. It's getting off a lot of pesticides. So I do recommend that you wash your food as much as reasonable in soap and water, especially fruits. And people say, ooh, washing my fruits in soap. Oh, that's so awful. Well, you think eating the pesticides is
right,
better?
Right, right.
And by the way, when I'm done, I then rinse them several times. There is no soapy residue left over because I rinse them off. This gets rid of a lot of the pesticides, and I'm convinced that the pesticides are a much bigger problem than the genetic engineering. And I am no fan of genetic engineering, but the immediate problem, the one that's really bad, is the fact that we are adding all kinds of chemicals to our food, and then we're loading it up with sugar on top of that, and then additives on top of that, and chemicals and preservatives, and we have too few nutrients. So here we are taking in too much of the wrong thing and not enough of the right thing. Common sense says you can't do that.
I can't argue with that. You were going to say something earlier about selenium. Did you have something to say about that?
Oh, golly, yes. And we talk about selenium a lot in orthomolecular medicine for everyone. We cite research by Harold D. Foster of British Columbia. Dr. Foster has been doing tests in Africa, and he found that people that are HIV positive that get selenium supplements do not show the symptoms of AIDS. There is just one example of how important selenium is for the immune system. Selenium is important for so many things that I think it would be better to send people right to Dr. Foster. And if you're interested in what he has to say, just do a Google search for Harold Foster.
There's an archive of him on my radio archive.
Oh, there is. And Harry's books are free downloads at his website. So he's so convinced of getting this information out that he's not even making any money off of it. Foster is a medical geographer. He was a tenured professor at the University of Victoria for 30 years. He's a brilliant man, and he looks at disease trends worldwide. And when he looked at Africa, he noted that some countries had very little AIDS problem. And he couldn't understand that because a nearby country would have a huge AIDS problem, and he noticed that it was the amount of selenium in the soil. As a geographer, he caught that. So he ran these tests where they gave HIV and AIDS patients selenium and also some amino acids, and they found tremendous improvement. So Foster continues to work on that, and that's just one of the many benefits of selenium. Another is selenium helps to fight cancer. It's a very important antioxidant. It works with vitamin E. In fact, selenium helps you to recharge and reuse and recycle your vitamin E. Now, you don't need a lot of selenium. It's measured, again, like chromium is, in micrograms. But we do need around 200, maybe 300 micrograms of selenium a day. A lot of soils in this great nation of ours are selenium deficient. Good news. Selenium is very inexpensive to buy as a supplement, and it's also found in nutritional yeast or brewer's yeast. Those are very good sources of selenium, as are whole grains.
Does the form of selenium, is there only one form, or is there several to choose from?
I'm unaware that there's a difference in what form you get. Again, you don't need much of this stuff. The important thing is that it's there. Your body seems to know how to absorb it.
Okay. Now, I'd like to know... I'd like to talk, see if you know anything about something new I've been reading about, germanium and iridium. And then I would like to talk a little bit about, if we have, we've got about 15 minutes, arginine, taurine, lysine, and tyrosine.
Well, of the two trace minerals you mentioned earlier, I am not sufficiently knowledgeable about that to discuss them in any detail. But as far as the amino acids you're talking about, we can certainly talk about those. Arginine, for instance, is found in nuts, peanuts. And when I was in Africa, this was some years ago, back in the 70s, I was in West Africa, we had a lot of peanut soup, and I really loved it. West African ground nut soup is just delicious. Nuts are high in arginine. Well, when I was researching this not too long ago, I found out that arginine and nuts actually help to prevent malaria. And I was glad of that because when I was over there, I was exposed to the little bugs that carry that, the mosquitoes that carry the microorganism that causes malaria. And I'm glad that I had all those nuts to eat. So there's an example of how an amino acid can really come in handy. Another example would be lysine.
I want to ask another question about arginine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that it did that malaria thing. That's a good thing to know. But I thought that it also made your blood vessels and arteries, it strengthened them and made them more elastic.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong about that? Or tell me what you know about that.
Well, I would say that that's probably true. I don't know if that effect would be greater than the value of vitamin C and vitamin E. They seem to really do a great deal for strengthening arteries and making them more elastic.
Okay.
I think that arginine is part of the equation. I don't know exactly how much that's specifically involved there.
Okay. I didn't mean to stop you. I just wanted to know that. What about lysine, taurine, and tyrosine?
Well, lysine's a real important amino acid, and people that are troubled with cold sores, herpes outbreaks, almost always benefit from taking lots of lysine. The effective dose is usually 3,000 to 6,000 milligrams a day, and you can get quite a lot of lysine by eating more beans. Beans are one of the really good foods that don't get a lot of press, and I think it's because they're cheap. Nobody's really making a lot of money off beans, you know. It's not one of those things that stands out and says, you know, you don't see ads on TV for beans.
Right.
My mother used to say, if it was advertised on television, you probably don't need it. And she would go into a big supermarket and say, look at all the things we can do without. Well, there's something to that. Beans are cheap, they're versatile, very high protein source, very high fiber source. And you really can do a lot with them. It's just amazing the number of things you can do with beans. Well, beans are high in lysine, and that means fewer cold sores and quicker healing if you have them. Also, people that take more lysine seem to be less likely to get cancer, notably cervical cancer in women is reduced among people who take more lysine. Yeah. There was a study done with women and breast cancer, and they were looking at who got it and why, and they compared black women, Hispanic women, and white women. And they took a pretty careful look, and they adjusted this for whether they smoked or not and what kind of lifestyle they had and other factors. And they found that Hispanic women had strikingly less breast cancer than black women or white women. And they found there was one clear-cut reason why. And you guessed it. Hispanic women eat far more beans than white and black women do.
I have a question here. Do you think, you know, estrogen in soaps and shampoos and deodorant and washing powders and all of that, do you think the Mexican women where they came from had all of that?
Maybe not.
You know that contributes to breast cancer. You know it does.
Yeah, and so does aluminum in antiperspirant deodorants.
Uh-huh.
There's so many things that can that can provoke the body to be unhealthy. The old phrase is, when in doubt, leave it out.
And birth control pills, you know?
For instance, I know women that have had headaches that were just off the scale. And when they got off the birth control pill, the headaches were gone. These are ladies that went in for MRIs. Their headaches were that bad.
I've been there. I've done it.
Yeah. I don't have firsthand on that, but I can tell you that when a woman is taking a birth control pill, I can understand her motivation clearly, and there's much to be said for how effective the pill is. But there are other forms of birth control out there that will not kill you and not make you feel like you want to be dead, and maybe those forms of birth control should be used first. The birth control pill is rough. When you mess around with a person's hormones to that extent, you know there's going to be a price to pay. There's no free lunch, ladies and gentlemen. You have to follow the rules of nature, and nature has been doing this longer than the pharmaceutical companies have been.
You've got 7 or 8 minutes. I didn't go into vitamin C, and I know that's one of your things. I'm going to give you a few minutes to say whatever you want to say.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. What I've been saying for 30 years to folks is, if you want better health, you can have it. Now, I've worked with people that were really, really sick. I've worked with people that have cancer, that have all kinds of other problems, and I have found that when a person is willing to learn and to change, there's enormous benefit that comes from it. I've worked with people that were so sick they could hardly get in and out of the chair, or they were in wheelchairs, and when they changed their diet, when they started taking vitamins, when they stopped eating junk food, and when they talked to their doctor about having fewer medications, reducing the dose, asking the doctor to gradually wean them off a medication while instead they use nutrition to build their body, these people had longer life and better quality of life. There is this one lady I mentioned earlier who had the real bad depression. She needed 11,500 milligrams of niacin a day. Now, she had been suicidally depressed. She would sit in the corner. She wouldn't talk to anybody. Her family wondered what they could do. Of course, the lady had seen a psychiatrist, and naturally, she was on medication. But they wondered about nutrition, and I mentioned what Dr. Hoffer said about niacin. They were interested, and they gave her simply enough niacin to make her feel better. Well, to make her feel better, it took a lot. At 11,500 milligrams of niacin, she was sitting at the table talking to everyone, and she was fine.
I have to tell you something. I've suffered profound depression ever since I had my second child. Suicidal kind of depression. And I was taking massive doses of pharmaceuticals. Hated it. So when I found out about Dr. Hoffer's work, I stopped. And I started doing the niacin, and I have to tell you something, it works.
Oh, yeah.
I was taking 150 milligrams of Effexor and 150 milligrams. I don't hide my life for my listeners. That's the only way I know how to help them. I'm a paralegal, for God's sake. The only way I can help them is to share my life. You know, I was taking 150 milligrams of Effexor and 150 milligrams of Wellbutrin, and I take nothing but the B's now and magnesium and the trace minerals now for my depression. And I don't have it now.
That is terrific. And this is exactly why I do what I do, and why it's such a pleasure to appear on your program and to write books with Dr. Abram Hoffer, because we want to get the word out. And as Margot Kidder, a famous actress who's another successful patient of Dr. Hoffer, would say, you can fix your brain. You can fix your brain with nutrition. And you can fix your body, too. Now,
you don't have a shortage of Wellbutrin, I can tell you that.
Well, sure. There's not a single cell in your body that's made out of a drug. Every part of you is made out of nutrients. And yet, when something goes wrong, we go looking for a drug. You know, it's a funny thing. If you gave me a brand new Rolls-Royce automobile, a nice 2009 Rolls-Royce, you just drive that into my driveway and leave it there for me, all righty? Now, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to take a big wrench, and I'm going to open up that hood, and I'm going to start messing with it. Now, you really think I'm going to improve that car? I don't think so. But this is what happens when we use all these drugs. And folks aren't just taking one or two drugs. They're taking 10 and 15 sometimes. And the
I know a man on 45 pills a day.
Holy cow. And it's worse with the elderly, isn't it?
Oh, and he's dying.
Yeah.
I get mad to even see him now because he always goes, oh, this is happening. That time I got a new pill. Don't even tell me. I don't want to know.
Well, there is another way. And for those folks who are willing to listen, the more they read, the more they learn. And knowledge is power. And the more information you have about your options, the better the outlook. Orthomolecular Medicine for Everyone is a 380-page how-to book. It tells you what to do, and it tells you why. We provide you with the references to back up what we're saying. We're not just making this up. There are hundreds of scientific references and support. But rather than have it be complicated, we've tried to make a book that is readable and clear. It cuts through the mumbo-jumbo, and it takes the mystery out of medicine. Nutritional medicine is so often the last thing people try. It should be the first. Dr. Roger J. Williams, who actually discovered one of the B vitamins, he's a professor of chemistry, president of the American Chemical Society. Dr. Roger Williams said, when in doubt, use nutrition first. And the great Carl C. Pfeiffer, a colleague of Dr. Hoffer's, said, for every drug, there is a nutritional alternative. This is what we want. Now, the more you learn, the better it is. If you go to doctoryourself.com, you can search any illness that's on your mind, and you'll find lots of information with the references to back it up so people can get started today. I tell people all the time, if you haven't started, start now. Forget about yesterday. Whatever's wrong with you, you can be better. You can improve it. I don't mean I have the sure cure, and I don't mean I have the quick cure, but I can say that you will feel better and improve your health when you start working on it. And that means, here it is again, no junk. Get rid of the sugar. No more chemicals in the food. Eat unprocessed whole foods. Now, if you have digestive problems and you have trouble with unprocessed whole foods, then you get yourself a juicer. And you put your vegetables through that juicer, and you'll get almost all the nutrients, but with less of the fiber. Start taking vitamins. You know, you read the newspaper lately, and they'd have you believe that vitamins are actually dangerous.
Well, I get mad to read the newspaper about that stuff.
Well,
I get mad at it.
I actually went and checked the data of the American Association of Poison Control Centers. 25 years of national data on who dies from what. And I wanted to find out how many people actually die from taking vitamins. In the last 25 years, according to the American Association of Poison Control Centers, there have been a grand total of 16 alleged deaths, all unproven, supposedly caused by vitamins. That's not even one death per year alleged to vitamins. And yet, according to the American Medical Association and the work of Harvard's Dr. Lucian Leap, every year, medical therapy, just drug therapy, just in hospitals, kills over 100,000 people every year. Now, this is a clear-cut wake-up call. Drugs are dangerous. Vitamins are safe. We need fewer drugs. We need more nutrients. We need to take the responsibility ourselves, and we need to talk to the doctor and say, I don't want another drug. I want to use nutrition. And bring in the books that you've been reading. Bring them in and lay them out in front of the doctor and say, I want to do this. And if the doctor says no, it's time to do what I say. Fire your doctor.
Yeah. All right. We're at the end of the time. I'm going to have you back. It's been a pleasure. So, fire doctor, Dr. Andrew Saul. Thank you, Dr. Saul.
My pleasure.
For taking the time to come to my show. Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. To Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.
still. Music was so peaceful. It was called Elebris, and it's from an album, And God Created Great Whales. Welcome to BBS Radio and Sound Health. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. Thank you for joining us. On this show, we try to present you with ideas and information in support of self-health. I love that idea, self-health. We get to do it. It's our body. It's our health. It's up to us. We hope you'll stay tuned for the next hour for answers to some questions that a lot of you have been asking. So this show is a show by request. Many of our regular listeners already know that I'm the pioneer of human bioacoustics and vocal profiling, and that I run a research facility in southern Ohio called Sound Health. I designed this nano program that we've been giving away for a long, long time, well, month, since last, I think, Thanksgiving, we gave it away. And we give it away, or any of you who don't have it already, it's nano, N-A-N-O, voice.org, and we give it away so that we can show people that there's information in their voice about them, about their genetics and their nutrition and what's going on in their body. You know, this week I have received probably 20 articles about the voice and how it tells us about ourselves and about music and how there's hidden codes in music. And a lot of these articles are from very prestigious people, like a big organization down in Australia sent me an article, and somebody who just won 2 awards for science writing. So a lot of information going on about the voice. You know, on this show, we don't often talk about what we do, but we're often asked about what we do here at the Sound Health Research Institute. And those people you're hearing in the background, we have a panel that's going to talk to you today about what it's like to take bioacoustic courses, integrate that into their life, and how they see this as part of the national, well, health crisis, I guess we could say. Before I introduce our panel of guests, I would like to invite all of you listeners to an open house that we're going to have in May, May 15th. Free food, free vocal profiles, that's even better. So if you want to experience having your voice done, this would be a great opportunity. You come in, we stick a microphone in front of your face and ask you to talk to us. And from the frequencies that are in your voice and also from what's not in your voice, those frequencies that are missing, we're able to tell you things about yourself, from your personality to your aging and what kind of genetics you have. We'll be taking calls today in just a few minutes. I'll give out those numbers. We already have 2 emails. So today on the show we have a panel, a very special panel. It's folks, all of them are involved with human bioacoustic vocal profiling. So let me introduce the panel. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Chris is a regular listener and contributor to the show. A lot of times those very important questions we ask to our guests come from Chris. Bob, are you with us?
Hi, Sherry.
Bob's a newcomer to Sound Health and Bioacoustics, and he has some personal interest in vocal profiling. He's going to talk about that. Barbara?
Greetings, Sherry.
Greetings. You're also a newcomer, and she joined our professional course recently, and from our conversation, she's likely going to end up being a trainer. Rose, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Rose is just beginning her work with Sound Health here as our media coordinator. She's very enthusiastic about what we do. And when she reported to work, and this is kind of funny, she reported to work and we plopped her down in class with no preparation, no nothing. So for you people who are going to end up doing that, she's probably going to give you a good perspective. Okay, Harlan and Catherine, you're already involved in healing. And
yes.
You recently took the professional course with an eye to adding bioacoustics to what you already offer to the public.
That's correct.
We've invited some other people, so they may join us, or they may be here already. So if anybody I haven't introduced, please speak up now. This is a great group and a lot of variety of experiences and perspectives, and they'll be answering your questions. Let me give those numbers first, and then Chris will start with you. The call-in numbers in the U.S., 877-876-5227, and in Canada, 888-815-9756, and if you want a direct number, 530-876-3222, and I am monitoring radio at vocalprofiling.com, and also Sherry on air, although that one's hard for me to reach, and I have to stretch across the room to get that one to another computer. So radio at Vocal Profiling will do, and I'll monitor that. Chris, how long have you been with us, and how did you come to be with us?
Just a little over a year. I first came to class in February of last year.
It seems a lot longer than that. How did you end up being here, Chris?
I found Sound Health in a search of different things that could help my son. And when I first learned about vocal profiling, it sounded interesting and intriguing. And then the more that I've learned about it, and then the more that I continue to study it today, the more amazing and the more interested and intrigued I continually am.
Well, Chris has also helped us build some really important computer programs about vaccinations and vaccination risk factors and ADD children and ADHD kids and how methylation is all part of that issue. So Chris will be talking more about that, I hope. Bob, you're from right here in Ohio. You didn't have to travel far to come to class. You've been with us 2 weeks, maybe, or did you take courses before that, the free courses?
No, Sherry, I'm a newbie. A week or 2 weeks ago tomorrow, our class started on the 23rd, and that was my first exposure to the classwork.
Did you take any of the free demo classes first?
Yes, I actually took I took the Nano Voice class once, and then I was so fascinated by it that I took it again when it was offered a couple of weeks later. So I've actually taken the Nano Voice course 2 times.
So you're a glutton for our punishment.
Well, you actually, it's kind of like listening to a song. The more you listen to it, the more you'll pick up. So I was really glad that I did do it the second time because it did... I picked up some things that I didn't pick up the first time because when you're exposed to this the first time, it's not easy to catch everything that is there.
One of the things we break continuously, it says for adult learners, don't give them any more than 3 new things every 45 minutes, and we break that rule continuously because we're trying to stuff everything in to a really short amount of time. We're really honored that people give us their time, but there's a lot to learn about this. It's not hard. It's just a lot of information. Barbara, how did you come about ending up in our class last week or the week before last?
Actually, yeah, I first attended online in January, and I found out, well, see, by day I'm a technology project manager for a large bank, and by night I'm an alternative news talk radio show junkie. And I found you on an appearance with George Noory about 2 years ago, and slowly, you fascinated me. I was really turned on by what you do. And I've searched your websites. I started doing some reading. Finally, last July, I took the NanoVoice course. And then finally, this past January, I just bit the bullet and said, okay, I really want to do this, even if it's a hobby or just to help my husband's back or whatever. And I took the course online in January and took it again in person in March.
So they don't mind if you take the class twice?
No, in fact, that was a really nice thing. If you take it online, you're allowed to actually take it in person within 90 days.
Would you recommend one over the other?
I recommend the way I did it, actually, because as you said, it is a huge amount of information. You know, your science that you've developed, you know it so well, it's like a fire hose. It's just coming at you, and you need to digest it. Taking it online first, I was able to go at my own pace, read the book, you know, all that good stuff, and then spend a couple of weeks working it out, rereading the book, actually starting to do things, knowing where I got stuck, knowing where I just didn't know what to do next. So when I came to take it, then I was really, I thought, well prepared to fill in those gaps and holes. So I feel pretty darn good now. I still have an awful lot to learn. Don't get me wrong, but I feel a lot more comfortable doing it that way.
You read this textbook, this 4-inch textbook, more than once?
I'm on my third reading. And I've been sending Nikki some little typo updates that I found as I go through it. So,
just revising it, we're breaking it down into several components. You know, I heard a couple of bells ring. Did some people just come in? New people come in? Janet and Kevin, did you come in? We're getting those little bells like there's new people coming in. Rose, are you still on with us?
Yes.
We hired Rose and just threw her in the class. What is it like to just jump in there raw with nothing?
It's kind of interesting. You get to learn more about the company and Sound Health. It was kind of scary because I didn't know really what was going on because I'm new to it, but I really enjoyed it.
Were you surprised that so much was going on?
Yeah. Yes, a lot of information is coming at you all at once.
You live in southeastern Ohio, right?
Yes.
Did you know of us before you came here to interview for a job?
No, not really. I'd known a couple girls that worked there, but I didn't know in depth of what it entailed and things like that.
Are you surprised we were so well hidden?
Yeah, I am. I think it should be more public and more people should know about it. And I guess that's my job now.
We figured if we told people around here, we would be absolutely bombarded because mm-hmm. there's so many people who want to see us already and we just don't have time for a lot of appointments. I think our appointments are like 2 or 3 months in advance. And we still can't keep up. So... were you surprised at the depth of what we do?
Yeah, very much so.
There's a lot of stuff to work with. Harlan and Catherine, are you on together there?
Yes.
Would you talk about how you ended up here and how you're already involved in healing?
Well, Sherry, due to a mutual friend several years ago, I was introduced to your work. In fact, to one of your practitioners, I did the process of what you had there. And I was very much interested in that time because I deal in electromagnetic fields professionally. And so I sent you an email, but you never answered me. So later on, I took up Quantum Touch out of California. Now they're in Hawaii, quantumtouch.com, became an instructor and a practitioner. And that modality deals in vibrations, frequencies, and so on. And after taking, I think, five of these courses in Quantum Touch, I realized it was time to talk to Sherry. And so Catherine has also been involved in Quantum Touch. And what's amazing with her is it took me 2 years or so to get where I was, and she did it in less than a year. And she's quite natural at it. So when I decided to think about Sound Health, I figured, sure, why not do it and make the investment, which I did do, and for Kathy also we did. And I talked it over with Kathy before I twisted her arm. I didn't have to. So, that's how I got started, and that's why we tripped up there 2 weeks ago.
Catherine, do you have anything to add to that?
I was very, very new to your type of work, but I'm just so excited to learn all this stuff. It's overwhelming to me right now, but I see such a need for it. I just think it's wonderful.
Well, Harlan, my apologies for never answering.
No, I understood why you didn't answer.
I answer my email every day, so I would think it went into the black hole of the Internet.
Well, that was like, 15, 20 years ago.
Oh, when there wasn't any Internet.
That's right.
I can understand that. We found a whole stash of letters that hadn't been answered. So.
Yes.
My apologies for that, but I do try to answer emails, even if it's just yes or no. Or
well, I understand that, but I entered the email from electrical engineer viewpoint, and not so much. I was just interested in what you were doing. I thought maybe I could help at that time. But when I took the class this time, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I understand the way you set this class up, because in reality, in order to do it, it's like a full semester course, going through all these techniques and everything, learning and so on. And what you did is make it easier for somebody like us who have other tasks to do, to push that in 1 week, and I'd say I got it all. But we actually came home with all the materials and electronic equipment so that we can actually continue on at our own pace and come up to speed as quickly as we can. I estimate maybe a month or two, I'm not sure, depending on our schedules.
Did you guys look at the Journal of Bioacoustic Biology and get some background there before you started?
No.
That's a really good short course. Journal of Bioacoustic Biology, JBAB.org. Like Justice Bad Apple Boy, JBAB. Harlan and Catherine and the rest of you can jump in here too. After you took your course on Friday, we gave you a week to rest, and then we threw you back in class. So how'd you like your Sunday class?
This is Harlan speaking. I liked it. I could do it relaxed, watch, listen. I listened to everybody discuss the issues that we were going over. And I'm glad you're doing that because it does help considerably. And getting questions answered, you know, when you need them. And I think that will actually speed up our progress.
What we're talking about is even after you take your week-long course, there are Sunday courses, and the newbies, which what most of these people are we're talking to except Chris, they have three classes that they can take. One is a review of the course, one is a review of all the computer programs, and then one is a review of the technique or the process that they go through to actually see a client. Chris, I'd like to address the next question to you. You have been attending these Sunday classes for what, a year or so? Important are those Sunday classes for people who have taken the courses, and what are they like?
Well, I think they're immensely beneficial. I used to study Tai Chi for about 5 years, which I gave up because I've been studying bioacoustics in with my limited time. And as my Tai Chi teacher's teacher would say, with his English it isn't so great, practice more, know more. And that as other people have said, there's so much information, and what I need to do is to be able to take part of that and then digest that and learn that and practice with it so that it becomes something that that you can use and is you can think with and understand what's going on and feel comfortable with it. So the Sunday classes.
Go ahead.
The Sunday classes have really helped because they are smaller pieces at a time, and it's great. You can get questions answered. You can just focus on individual parts, and it's really been helpful.
There's a lot of the old hats, which is what Chris has considered. After about 3 months, people turn in their case studies, and they get off the newbie kind of list and go to sort of intermediate. But there's a lot of people who've been with us for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and they still come to those Sunday review classes because we're continuously changing the questions based on what people want or what we left out. And I think the open Sundays are the most interesting because people bring their questions, their case studies, and we try to help them right online. It's Sundays from 2 to 4. We don't have classes on holidays. Occasionally when I am traveling, other people will do it. Like this month, Nancy Blatchley, who's been with us for 5 or 6 years and a great instructor, is doing the Sunday classes as we get prepared for our conference. That's an annual conference coming up in May, and that's the open house that I invited you guys to.
Sure.
Yes.
I didn't know if we could speak or not.
Kevin, thank you for being here. Is Janet with you too?
Yes,
yep. Yep.
Would you guys speak to those Sunday classes? I didn't know you were on.
Well, we didn't get the email until we opened up the internet in order to find out what you had on your program, and then we found it. So we had a little trouble getting dialed in so that we could participate. Sunday classes has been an extraordinary valuable thing. It's a great tool for upgrading the information and sort of refining and reinforcing, because a lot of the concepts, as the earlier speakers were saying, they're kind of a new way of looking at things. Now, I have to reassure everyone who is new to it that it will become much easier to understand and grasp, and all of it starts to make more sense. And that as we watch you go through programs and analysis, and especially on the Sunday classes, it gets easier and easier to follow. And the next time you open up the program, take a print, and start to look at the wheels and pods and all the stuff that we learn about, it falls into place. And my first perception of how to learn this came to me when we took the class, and that it's kind of like learning a musical instrument. Some people take to it right away, and they can create a beautiful chord on an instrument right away. Maybe they aren't a skilled performer, but they can create right away. self-reinforcing as you continue. As Chris said, the practice is where it really comes in. As you keep going through it over and over, you become more and more proficient, and then it makes more and more sense. So,
Janet and Kevin, how long have you been with us?
It'll be 2 years in June.
And you guys have actually taught some of the Sunday classes, haven't you?
Yes. Yes.
Great.
Well, we've conducted the reviews. Actually, the reviews were your sets of questions that we'd been through enough times that we felt we could make sure that they were understood as we went through the questions.
And whenever, as you know, Sherry, whenever you teach, you learn as much, if not more, than the people that you're teaching when you're in the middle of it. So it's always a rewarding experience.
And a lot of the times those review classes or the review questions are just things that I may have forgotten to mention in class, and they're important pieces that people need.
Oh, right.
Barbara, you've taken the class twice, and you've talked a little bit about the difference between online and being in class. You have that experience of being able to look at it with eyes that have already seen the material, and I don't think any of the rest of the people have. So do you have some words to the wise about how people could prepare for class?
I would highly suggest that people get the book a week ahead of time and do as much pre-reading as possible. It probably won't make a lot of sense, but at least they'll be aware of what the different chapters contain, maybe get the feel for some buzzwords, that sort of thing. So to me, as much pre-reading as you can do it will really prove valuable. And it would also prove valuable if you set your expectations to really devote yourself that first week. When I first, the week I took it online, I really didn't, when it ended, maybe I spent an hour doing something and then I went on with my normal life. When I actually came down there in person, it was quite different because I was away from everything. I really felt like I had found my niche, and I was up until 1 o'clock every single morning, and I am not that kind of a person. I am normally in bed by seven, by 7 o'clock at night, so tonight is even a stretch for me because I'm a morning person and I get up at four. But I was up until 1 o'clock every night going through, sorting through my notes, trying to organize things the way I need to learn. And I got so much out of it, being away and being able to devote, 20 hours a day in those 5 days to it. So again, setting your expectations and figuring out how you need to learn.
Was it exhausting?
Yes, it was. My eyes were very, very tired, but yet I was truly energized. It was an incredible experience. That's the only way I can describe it.
Well, all the pre-material that we sent you and all the videos on YouTube and other things we pointed to, was that helpful in preparing you?
Yes, it was. Absolutely. And the first time around, I didn't really look at all the videos, and the second time around, I did. And yes, if I had looked at those again, in the very beginning, I would have been aware. I probably wouldn't have understood everything again, but at least I would have been a little bit more aware. So yes, absolutely, Carrie, all your material is extremely helpful. And as someone said earlier, this is a semester's course. Crammed into a week, so it's up to you how you want to process all this information.
Well, we warn people up front, this is a seminar course. We're going to skim the surface, and it's up to you to get the rest of it.
Yeah, and those are words until you actually experience it and say, whoa.
Well, I'm going to go to the other end, Rose. You had no preparation. All you could do was just sit there and listen. How did that feel?
It was good because you got a lot of knowledge. You were able to take some stuff in, but at the same time, I some of it I didn't have any clue what was going on.
I have done this so many times. It just seems so easy to me. Sometimes I forget that people start from really no knowledge. And for me, or for anybody, I think, teaching this course at the beginning level is the absolute hardest. We have a lot of trainers, and they can teach the upper-level courses. They can teach the labs, but they find great difficulty in keeping this really simple and integrating it into what's going on all at the same time, the information. So we try to take it step by step, but again, it's hard to teach this because there's so many pieces that you have to, like, keep in mind. So you just sit back and kind of absorb, and that works well. Okay, thank you, Rose. Barb, Harlan, and Catherine, you guys had some preparation. Bob,
Harlan did. I didn't.
Okay, so you were like Rose. You were just kind
of... I was like Rose.
So how'd that feel, Catherine?
Some of it was kind of overwhelming, but very interesting, and I have a lot of study ahead of me.
Did it make a difference when we made you get up and do it in class? Was that helpful?
Yes, it was.
So we do some lecture, and then we make you do it. Barbara, when you took it on online, were you able to see the, I don't know what you call it, the live video feed so people could watch in class?
Oh, yeah, I have two screens, so I was able to watch the sound presentation as well as the classroom. What I found really valuable being in person is because I really didn't have the hands-on real-world experience of seeing what, you know, how you did the SMAD and what the tones really sound like. So being there in person really, really helped clarify that because that was one of my gaps that I was having.
Harlan and Bob, I'd like to speak to both of you, but whoever wants to go first, what's it like in class when you have just a little bit of information before you get here?
Well, Bob did better than I did, that's for sure. But after taking the class, and I realized what you said earlier, that it's difficult for you with you and others because you're so familiar with it, you don't know how to break it down to the point. Well, you do know how, but, I mean, it takes time and effort and understanding how to break it down to the point where you start off with something very simple and then teach it such that they can't help but understand it. I've been in engineering for many number of years, and I've had to teach certain military types with third-grade education, and that taught me exactly how to do that. I kept saying, I need to go from step one. Where is step one? I could never find it. And after I got into it, I found it, you know, somewhere in the middle of the book. And I'm saying, okay, when I get through this, I'm going to set this thing up so I can do it, you know, real easy. And like I said, it takes time over a period. I mean, just stay there for a couple months, it would be very expensive to do. But the way it was done, as far as I can tell, it was done correctly because I was able to take everything and come home and do it at my own pace. And I have to endure. I'm a visual person. You can talk to me all day and say words. I have no idea what you're talking about. But you show me what you're doing, and I do it, and it's easy.
And we did get you in the middle and have you do stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you did. And that tone, when they actually did a tone on me, and I went with the tone box. They already programmed it. I came here back to Alabama and listened to it twice or three times. Now I don't need to listen to it anymore. And it did make a difference. I could feel the difference in my heart. I mean physically, not emotionally, but physically.
Okay, let me catch the audience up just a little bit. People come in, and we teach them to take a vocal sample, and we call that evaluation.
The next step then is they look at that sample. They look at the frequencies. They look at the architecture. We decide what frequencies they need more of and what they need less of and what's really going on in their system. Then we test them on those tones and put it in a tone box, a little thing bigger than a, I hate to say a cigarette pack, but that's kind of about the size of it. And they listen to those tones, and that entrains their brain. We want them to hate their sounds as soon as possible because the whole idea is to get the body to make the sounds on its own. So we don't want people to stay on the sounds forever. And we look at the body like we're peeling away levels of things. Somebody comes in and they're really fatigued, and we may give them the nutrient sounds to help with the fatigue, and once we peel that layer, it may show Epstein-Barr. So we look at the body in layers and go from there. Go ahead.
I have one more thing, statement to make about that. What we learned in quantum touch, that we cannot digest your lunch or do any other body functions for you, which means that the body actually heals itself. And that's what I liked about with Sherry's work, because they're interjecting those frequencies that do help the body to heal itself.
Yes, and we're able to individualize it, and that's what I like about it. When people do hands healing, they individualize it for each person. But it's something that, people really don't know they're doing. They're responding. It's not quantified. With quantum touch, you're giving people energy based on what you feel from them. We're really looking at the vocal plant and being able to verify what's going on. This person has macular degeneration. They have a problem with their eye muscles, and now they don't. They have MS, and now after sound, they don't. So a lot of these verifications come from really helping reverse the disease or even identify, and I want to say dis-ease, because we're going to talk about disease a little later. Bob, what was it like for you in class?
Well, I probably was the most informed person in the room as far as somebody was being exposed to everything. I studied journalism in college and graduated from Ohio State with a degree, and so I have a certain well-defined and well-honed sense of skepticism. And when I heard you the first time on George Norrie's show, I was very interested in your work and immediately started doing a fair amount of research as far as what I could learn online, and everything online seemed to be pretty legitimate, very positive things, nothing there that was of any concern at all. You've got a very good recommendation, good record as far as the public. And so at that point, I actually spoke with several practitioners around the country to learn their experiences in the business and how they were enjoying their sound health experience. And to a person, they were all very upbeat about. They were all the one word that came across in every conversation was fascinating. Everybody said that the program was fascinating and. And then at that point, I actually, I myself was diagnosed with diabetes 2 years ago. And, so I actually engaged the services of a practitioner for, about 2 months before enrolling in the class, just so I could get a feel for what it all involved. And, having done all that, I, decided to enroll in the class. And so I was, of course, not familiar with everything, but I had a brief familiarity with a lot of the concept involved. But even then, it was still quite a bit of information. But it's like planting a garden. You just are planting a lot of seeds, and it's up to us to water them and nurture them and make them grow into becoming a full-time researcher.
Was downloading and using the Nano Voice helpful to you?
Very much so. As a matter of fact, the two classes that I took with you online to learn about the Nana Voice were very, very interesting. And I couldn't, anybody who hasn't done that, I would certainly encourage them to take a Nana Voice class, because that will, I'm sure, pique your interest. If it doesn't, well, then perhaps you would be in the minority, but it's certainly myself and just about everybody that I talk to who's taken the Nana Voice course, everybody finds it very, very interesting.
Well, there's no reason why they shouldn't. The software is free. The class is free. The textbook's free. So there's no reason why that can't be useful to someone. Even if they're just going to use it, should I take this class or not? And your voice will tell you why your intention is to take this class and what you really need to do with it. So, boy, most of you have mentioned George Norrie's radio show, the Coast to Coast. When we went on that show, we had thousands of calls. We were not prepared for how people wanted this information. You know, most of the calls were about they needed help with their health, and we got into a situation where we really created a bad situation. We didn't have enough people to fulfill what people needed to be seen. So we backed off a bit, and we thought we need to train more people to get this done, because for every one person who wanted to train to do it, we probably had 10 or 20 who needed to be seen. And a lot of them were desperate. My child's going to die tomorrow, and my kid's in a coma. And it's heartbreaking to hear those stories, but we didn't mean to create a need we couldn't fill, and we need all the people that we can find that will take this back to their communities, particularly with this big one we're doing, the Army, the traumatic brain injury, and the post-traumatic stress disorder. A statistic that I heard that it's just gut-wrenching, is that more soldiers come back from Iraq and commit suicide than have been killed over there. And if there's any way we can stop that, we want to be part of that. I want to ask you guys, and have you answer, a couple of these questions that have come in, and that there's only two that I can see. And anybody who wants to answer this, do you think this technique will help with the threatened bird flu pandemic?
I have to say absolutely.
That was Kevin. Is it because you worked with pathogens before?
Yes. Not before. I mean, as far as working with herbal healing methods and natural healing prior to learning about bioacoustics, what I like so much about learning about bioacoustics is that we can take a print and we can target specific things and we can affect them almost immediately, whereas everything else seems to have a lag. Every other method I've ever tried as far as managing
Okay,
hello?
Janet,
yeah,
can you add to what...
Oh, yeah. The problem with anything that has come out for any of the flu viruses is that they have an idea of what the virus is going to be way in advance. And in order to have production actually come about so they can sell the vaccines, it's been in the pipeline for such a long time that the virus has mutated so many times over that there's no possible way they can even come close. The other problem is that there have been mistakes and there has been live vaccine in the bird, in the flu vaccine itself, and you're not supposed to administer live vaccine. And that's live virus in the vaccine. That's very damaging. Now, with sounds, with the tones that we have in bioacoustics, there's no way we're going to create that type of harm. And the virus, since it's constantly mutating, it's a moving target. It can mutate within a week, maybe 2-3 weeks, depending on the type of virus. And with sounds, whatever is out of coherence and is a high, you will spot it. Even though we might not have the name for it and know exactly what frequency equivalent is on, it'll be a high in the chart. And all we do is target the highs and put them in balance or target the lows and equalize them out, and we will be finding it. There are things that people have that are viruses that we don't even know what they are yet. When we have things like fallout from the eruptions on Jupiter, and then finally it starts traveling through the solar system and hits the planet Earth, who knows what the heck we're getting? But bioacoustics and taking the voice prints, we can balance all the unknowns out, and that addresses the bird flu specifically.
Can I say something? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Kevin.
Okay. Something else about that, too, is that each individual, as they assimilate a disorder, whatever that happens to be, the way their body manages it and reflects it is going to be slightly different. So when we take a voice print, we get that person at that time with exactly what they have showing up in the voice print. I'm always amazed at how much information is really there.
And then another thing is, in a family, say perchance one person in the family got the bird flu, and then by the time it got down the road to the second or the third child, it's mutated within the same family. So then the frequency equivalent that Papa had originally isn't going to be what the second or the third child have, because it's changed already. Bioacoustics can address that.
And we've also addressed herpes and papilloma and lupus. So a lot of things show up in the voice as an architecture of a pathogen, and we can actually look at it in its genetic form before it becomes pathogenic. Like somebody getting exposed to the measles, it takes 10 days for them to get the measles. So we can see it at those different stages. We only have a few minutes left, and I would like you guys to stay online with me, if you would, because I would like to continue this even after we go off the air with the show. So there's a lot of important information that I think we need to cover. So do we think this technique can help with a threatened pandemic? Yes. I've seen it help with Epstein-Barr. I've seen it help with chlamydia and pneumonia. A lot of people don't even know they have that. And so we've been able to identify a lot of things, like nanobacteria, when someone has a heart issue, from tooth decay, from tooth issues. So, yes, we think we can do that. Now, this next one, I don't have any idea how to answer this, so I'm going to throw it out to you guys. And then, Bob, be prepared to talk about macular degeneration, too. But this next question is, do you think this technique can make the government back off about forced vaccination?
How you coax people who are bought and paid for into backing off from supporting their entrenched financial interests. I think the only thing that you can actually do is inform people of possibilities other than being poisoned. And then they will have to choose. Long ago, Chan and I chose we were not going to use pharmaceuticals. And so far, we've been managing to stay away from it for over 20 years. And successfully so, and it's been very gratifying to find that we can target things that have been showing up recently by finding them in our voice prints.
But then you can't really determine what the government is going to do as far as forced vaccinations or not when you consider what a large money maker the pharmaceutical industry is, the only thing that will probably change something like that is if the economics of the government are not able to afford such expensive drugs for all the people. And then if there happens to be a medical plan for everyone, like socialized medicine in the country, then it's a strong possibility that these natural ways will come forward because they are the cheapest, they do less harm, and they make the populace healthier, so then we can become good workers for our government.
I think what these people are really asking is, will this technique, bioacoustics, step in and allow us to take over our own health care? I think that's the real crux of that question.
Well, that's a true.
I think that's an idealized concept, and that's what we would like to happen, and that's what should happen.
Well, we
that's
have
the first step that we need to do.
Go ahead, Chris.
Toward that is telling, or you know, telling people about this, because before people will take that responsibility and start to think about some of those things, they need to see that there are tools that can help them to do that.
Absolutely.
Yes. I have seen so many miracles. One of the reasons that Bob ended up with us is that we've had very good success with macular degeneration. And I have to watch the time really close here, but if you can, please stay with us after we sign off for the show. So, Bob, can you, in 2 minutes, sum up your interest in macular degeneration and how that sent you here?
Sure. Actually, my mother was diagnosed with macular degeneration approximately 4 months ago, and in one of the Coast to Coast AM shows, you did speak of how you had success with treating that. And as part of my investigation, I actually learned the name of the gentleman that you had worked with, at least one of several of several clients that you have had. And I actually found out that this gentleman lived in Mansfield, Ohio, was able to locate him and spoke with him at length about his experience with you. And he did, in fact, verify that his macular degeneration was dramatically improved through your bioacoustic therapy, and so yeah, there is definitely a track record of individuals who have been helped with bioacoustics who have suffered from macular degeneration. The particular gentleman that I spoke to was no longer able to drive a car. He is now driving a car. He feels like he has been given the gift of sight back by bioacoustics, and this was all just independently done on my own. And so this was just a grassroots investigation, and found out that everything that you claimed had happened had, in fact, happened.
Are you going to write an article about us, Bob?
Sure, I'll be happy to do that for you, Sherry.
That would be great. You know, he just came in last week, and he was having trouble in moving from dark to light, and we were able to help him with that. And we ended up seeing that it was something called 5-methylfolate. And I didn't know really what that had to do with eyesight, but one of the things, when your eyes are very sensitive to light, then folate is low. So I learned with each new case just like everyone else. And we're going to have to sign off now, but for those of you who are on the line with me, please stay tuned. Thank all of you for taking the time out of your busy weekend to join us. Thank you, panel, for being here. I know some of you don't want to be up this late. We know your time is very, very valuable. You know, time is a very precious commodity. So thanks for sharing with us. Do join us for more Vocal Profiling on Thursday evening, right here on BBS Radio, 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern. Thanks for listening. We're leaving with some whale songs here.